Okay, we all ready to go? I'm going to call the meeting to order. Okay. Well, happy holidays, everyone, and we'll have our last meeting of the year. Feels like our first meeting of the year since we had so few last year. We call to order, if you'd like to call the roll.
Will do. Vice Chair Brennan.
Here.
Director Copeland.
Here.
Director Gomez. Director Gustafson. Excuse me. Yes. And my apologies. Committee members Hatchett.
Here.
Committee member McLooney.
Present.
Committee member Storm.
Here.
Chair Stroh.
Here.
Committee member Swint. Committee member Turley. You have quorum today.
We have a quorum. Yay. We end the year well. Let's go to any changes to the agenda.
No changes.
No changes. Okay. And we'll move on to public comment. Do we have any members from the public here or online that need to say their piece on anything that's not on the agenda?
No comments were received at the office. No one here in the boardroom. And let me check online because we do have a participant. No hands raised online, no comments.
Okay, so we'll move on to item five, accept and file the summary actions for advisory committee meeting on October 2nd. Do anybody have any issues with the previous minutes?
Nothing
Nope.
received.
Okay, well, we'll ex unless there's an objection, we'll accept and file. Item six, presentation on the proposed zero emission utility terrain vehicles program. David Frisby is going to give that, or okay. All right.
Zeus program for short. I'll start by going over what a utility terrain vehicle is. A utility terrain vehicle is designed to travel over rough terrain on four or more wheels, have an engine size of 1 liter of displacement or less, and have a maximum brake horsepower of 40 horsepower or less. UTVs are used in various disciplines, including but not limited to agriculture, landscape maintenance, and school campus operations. Starts with some background to the program, starting with September 2020 and Governor Newsom's Executive Order N7920. Executive Order N7920 established the goal of California to achieve 100% zero emissions from all off-road equipment and vehicles by 2035. And fast forward to October 2024, the California Air Resources Board updated their Carl Moyer and Farmer program guidelines, including zero emission UTV sections and an optional administrative process, which I'll speak to later in the presentation. And coming to August 2025, MBART updated the CARB grant program's policies and procedures manual, including the new framework for the Zeus program. UTVs are part of a category of vehicle described by CARB as off-highway recreational vehicles, or OHRVs for short. OHRVs are not required to be replaced by a regulation, which would make the benefits achieved by the Zeus program surplus emissions reductions. And furthermore, according to the EPA, one two-stroke OHRV can produce more pollution per hour than 30 passenger cars. This is due to the fact that passenger car or UTVs are not required to have the same emissions control technologies as these on-road vehicles. The Zeus program will be structured similarly to MBART's well-established diesel engine and equipment replacement program, as well as the landscape equipment exchange program. It is a replacement program in which applicants are incentivized to recycle their old, dirty combustion UTVs and purchase new, clean, zero-emission UTVs. The Structure is laid out here, starting with the application and approval process online. Approved applicants will then enter into a 3-year contract with MBARD and recycle their old dirty combustion UTVs, after which they can purchase the new zero-emission UTV and request for a reimbursement online. Certain applicants will also be able will also are also required to submit annual reporting. Next slide, please. The ZEUS program will be split up into two components. The first is for agricultural operations, and the second is for public agencies and nonprofits. Projects for agricultural operations will follow the farmer guidelines, in which the baseline vehicle can be a UTV, an ATV, or a tractor with less than 25 horsepower, all of which are older than 5 years old. The farmer program guidelines also require a working hour meter as well as annual reporting. And for public agencies and nonprofits, projects will follow the Moyer guidelines, in which the baseline UTV can only be a UTV, and there is no requirement for a working hour meter or annual reporting. MBARD has allocated a total of $200,000 in project funds for the ZEUS program. $100,000 in farmer funding is allocated for agricultural operations, and $100,000 in Moyer funding is allocated for public agencies and nonprofits. The incentive amount for all projects is 75% of eligible costs, up to $13,500. As mentioned previously, the California Air Resources Board included an optional administrative process in the 2024 Farmer Guideline Update. The optional administrative process does not require inspections by district staff, which would streamline the implementation of the ZEUS program. To further streamline the process of the ZEUS program, MBARD is building the application with the low-code software LaserFiche. With the power of LaserFiche, the application for the ZEUS program will be available online in English and Spanish. Applicants will be able to upload pictures, videos, and documents. The applicants will go through to a multiple-step approval process, and LaserFiche is being programmed to automate the drafting of grant contracts as well as email communications. Lastly, I'll go over the few requirements for replacement UTVs. The first is that it is a new zero-emission UTV, obviously. The towing capacity is 500 pounds or greater. The total vehicle weight is 700 pounds or greater. And the vehicle drivetrain, including the battery packs, is covered by a warranty of 1 year or more. In Greek mythology, Zeus is known for his ability to harness the power of the thunderbolt. With the new Zeus program, MBARD will be harnessing the power of electricity by providing funding to offset part of the cost of a replacement zero-emission UTV. And with that, please feel free to ask any questions, input any guidance, and thank you for your time.
No one online, but you have a question then.
Oh, Jen.
What's the typical cost for a retrofit?
From my research, it can be anywhere from $10,000 and go all the way up to $80,000 as that Nikola Tesla off-road vehicle.
Quite a
It's a huge range, yes. Depending on the use case, it's up to the applicant to decide which vehicle they would like.
I may have missed this in the presentation, but this doesn't apply to any recreational vehicles of this type, does it?
It is considered a recreational vehicle, but they are used in commercial applications. The public agencies and nonprofits are used in commercial applications, but no residents can apply for the program as individuals.
Oh, please turn on your mic, please.
Is there any restriction as to the amount of money that you can offer a single agent?
Yes, $13,500 is the maximum grant amount, and that's set by the California Air Resources Board in the program guidelines.
$13,500.
$13,500.
Pardon me if I missed this as well, but is this program active or planned to be soon?
It is in development. We are planning to launch sometime early next year.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Receive a presentation for the proposed item 7, proposed electric vehicle charging infrastructure program. Has that been delegated to?
Hello, members of the advisory committee. My name is Irene Miranda, and like Michael, I'm a planner here at MBART. And so today we'll talk about another proposed program that we're developing for electric vehicle charging infrastructure, affectionately known as CHIP. Next slide. So this picture I took at a post-inspection at a prior infrastructure project in Salinas. And so just to get the terms clear as we go forward, let's just give an overview. The whole area is the infrastructure site that includes, you know, the power dispenser, the parking, handicap access, the whole thing. And then the white unit in the middle, that's the charger. So that's going to dispense the power to electric vehicles. The black cords are connectors. And you can see that we have someone actually connecting to a vehicle. How many of you guys have electric vehicles? Or so you know some of this. Okay, so I won't go over too much. Next slide, please. So as you know, a lot of you know, there are three levels of charging, and they're usually determined by speed. So the first level, level one, would use an ordinary residential outlet of 120 volts alternating current. Very slow. It could take days to charge an electric vehicle on one of those outlets. And so that's residential only, and it won't be part of this offering. But levels two and three will be. So level two, those are medium speed chargers. And there is a residential application. You can use a 20 volt AC plug, like from your washer or dryer. But again, these will only be publicly accessible projects. So there are level two chargers out there in the public. So those are medium speed. It could take hours to charge your vehicle. And then level three, also known as direct current fast chargers, those are specialized equipment and it delivers direct current to your EV. And that can charge a vehicle in, you know, 20 minutes, less than an hour. Next slide. So MBART has done electric vehicle infrastructure projects in the past using various funds. Here are a few. So using local vehicle registration funds from the DMV, we were able to help ChargePoint deliver over 200 connectors throughout the district. And then also Moyer State Reserve funds, you know, the picture I showed you with the infrastructure site, that was done by EV Range. So that came in to operation this fall, and they have 8 connectors there. This is a DC fast charging site, and each connector can deliver 180 kilowatts of power. So you could charge your vehicle in 15 or 20 minutes. And then we also have CAP funds, Community Advantage Protect or Air Protection Program. And that is set up for the district's disadvantaged communities. We currently have 2 active projects there. So our disadvantaged communities here are Watsonville, Southeast Salinas, and Moss Landing. So this is our proposal. We want to formalize this project category of infrastructure. And we would use it under the umbrella of approved programs that the board has already approved. And I already mentioned them a little bit, Carl Moyer Program and Community Air Protection Program. So, and the proposal to continue expanding access to EV infrastructure, of course, is going to reduce fossil fuel reliance, decrease exposure to toxic air contaminants, and improve air quality region-wide. So initially, the program was funded with $1 million of DMV fees out of AB 923. And so that's where we'll start. And if more funds are needed, because we don't know yet what the how many projects we'll get. If more funds are needed, or if we have something in a disadvantaged community, then we can use some of these other funds. So this is what CHIP will do for us. It will create a formal system so that we can take in applications, again, through Laserfiche, like Michael suggested, and then evaluate them. Each project will have already have had to have a competitive bid process within their project so that we know we're getting good value. There'll be also, like I said, all has to be publicly available sites, at least within normal business hours. And then After the project is completed, we'll do an inspection like I did for EV Range, and then they'll get reimbursed. So that's how the funds will be distributed. And we should be launching this spring. Next slide. Eligible projects would go to public entities like municipalities and schools, to commercial businesses and nonprofits. And there are two types of projects that we can fund. And they'll, of course, I already told you, they'll always be levels 2 and 3. But the two types of projects would be brand new infrastructure, where they're actually breaking ground, or upgrades to existing infrastructure. And so the upgrades can be very cost effective because they already have all the elements in place, including power. So an upgrade could be one of two things, or both: add more connectors or increase the power. So if you've got voltage already in and you add a charger that has higher amps, you're gonna get greater power output. Next slide, please. And this is where we're gonna be looking for them. Remember the picture we saw in the beginning? That was a site visible from Highway 101. So that's a corridor or Highway 1. And then also workplaces, destinations. The Salinas site was at Westridge Plaza. It's right next to Costco. And then schools, multi-unit dwellings or apartments or condos, and then disadvantaged communities. Next, please. So we have program guidelines that help us figure out what are eligible costs. And the baseline for the Carmoya program is 60% of those eligible costs. And for the CAP program, community air protection, 65% of eligible costs. But other costs can be added or become eligible for greater funding amounts based on the project. So if it's at a school and it's servicing an electric school bus, it can go up to 100%. Or if it's a publicly accessible site, we can add more availability. However, some of these can be very expensive. Like the Salinas project was over $800,000. So we propose some maximums. That way we can spread out the money throughout the district and not have just a couple that are very expensive, you know, use up all the money. So here's a proposed maximum: $10,000 per level 2 connector, or $300,000 per level 3 project. So that's what we have. So do you have any questions, comments? Yes, sir.
Oh, turn on your mic, please.
I'm sorry. A couple of questions. One on the community disadvantaged area. I noted that you did not include Pajaro. Is there a reason?
Is Pajaro part of it? Yeah, that's Southeast Salinas.
It was the northern part of Monterey County. On the other side of the.
Yes, you're right. My mistake. Thank you.
It couldn't be included with Washington because it's not in the same county. We need to be part of that disadvantaged community. So,
Mr. Frisbee is saying that yes, it is. It is part of a disadvantaged community. So it's included. Pajaro is included.
So
thank you.
The other question I have.
Yes, sir.
Is, Pajaro Sunny Mesa Community Service District, which is a public agency, would it qualify if it electrifies its fleet of trucks, would it qualify for funds to install the charging systems?
Public agencies are the entities that we would like to fund.
And you said that the limit for the charging station is either $300,000
for the whole project.
For the whole project,
right?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great, Janet.
Yes, ma'am.
About how many projects do you think will be funded?
Well, we had a prior offering that another planner, Eli, put together, and I think there were dozens of projects that were accepted, but I think you would know better.
And it's an open process, so it'd be up to how many signposts would be willing to be part of that, so hard to know.
We've tried to make it attractive in that we want lots of projects submitted. So to offer something like upgrades, that's like low-hanging fruit. It's easy to upgrade an existing station and not very expensive.
But at $300,000 for some projects are talking about three, so, right?
Well, there are other funds that could be made available. So the initial offering is $1 million, but there are other funds. If we have lots of projects, we would look at that.
What other funding source?
So the initial offering is $1 million from DMV funds from AB 923. There are more funds that will become available from AB 923 and also DMV funds through AB 2766. There's also Carl Moyer funds from the basic program. There's also the State Reserve Moyer funds, and there are CAP funds for the disadvantaged communities like Pajaro. Oh. You're welcome.
Thank you for the presentation.
Yes.
Am I understanding it right that this proposal is really creating an umbrella to bundle these existing funding sources and kind of streamline the application process? Is that fair to say?
Well, we want the application streamlined, but I'm not sure.
Well, you mentioned
the bundling.
Some of the participating programs like CAP, which are pre-existing programs.
Right. So as far as I understand, I'm not in management, but from what I've seen, we can use different funds from different sources to fund a single project.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would just state that a lot of programs right now are modeled after Carl Moyer grant program. So we're seeing like farmers very similar. It has different requirements, but we have discrete packages of money that we have specific duties and responsibilities to. So we can't umbrella, put them all under one umbrella, but we're able to choose from those various funding sources. Basically, a lot of them can supply funds for the same type of project. So we'll just grab when we need it. And we're constantly, and then David knows this, the pressure is on to get rid of the money. So we have a lot of money coming in, and it's multi-year money. So if we can't fund something this year, we can do it next year and maybe even the year after. So we're looking forward and we're trying to get these monies out as quickly as possible so we don't lose any of these monies.
Thank you. That's helpful. My second question is, in addition to the programs you mentioned, which of course focus on the chargers, is there any consideration or need, as you mentioned, trying to get the money out the door to expand this to the vehicle side of programs that MBART has to get money out the door, such as Zeus, like, you know, addressing all of the programs, not there, just charging?
There is an electric vehicle incentive program, EVIP, that's currently open. So several of us here have actually received money as an incentive for my electric vehicle. So that's been ongoing for a number of years.
So that's a really good question. Just to add to that, the board has been concerned about our electric vehicle incentive program, and they are actually going to be considering different areas to provide grant funds. So they may actually take some of that money back and apply it towards infrastructure. We'll be having a session with the board in the next several months to better define what they like. There was a time when this was the crown jewel of this agency, the fact that we're giving out money to buy electric vehicles or lease them. And now I think the board is sort of questioning if that's still adding value because, you know, we're basically giving money to people that can afford expensive cars for the most part. So anyways, a lot more to continue on that, but we'll try to jigger the funding to make sure that we have the biggest bang for the buck. That's what we're trying to do.
Thank you.
Just one question on the, we were talking about breaking ground on new locations is roughly around 300,000 per. And then if we want to do upgrades or retrofits to already currently existing locations, that's going to be much more cost effective. And you said low hanging fruit. About how many locations throughout the district would we have available to do those retrofits on?
Well, you can look at ChargePoint's map, mm-hmm. or PlugShare. So
right.
Those are apps, as you're probably aware of, that shows you where chargers are. Mm-hmm. They are throughout our district, but there are also, and I would say there are, I'm just going to say a rough guess from looking at that map, I'd say there are well over 500, mm-hmm. but there are also gaps, like along Highway 101. So there are lots of places that could go ahead and upgrade. One thing I've noticed is that a lot of the level two stations are delivering power at an output of only, say, 7 kilowatts. And that's actually pretty low now. So batteries are bigger.
Yeah.
And so if these can upgrade to 11 or 19 kilowatts, then they're going to be much more competitive. And on those apps, you can look to see what is the output you would get from that station.
Right. Is there an estimate for the cost for going from that upgrade from 9 to 20 or so watts?
Well, then you want to, you know, the charging unit, the white box, you get a higher amp going in there. Mm. And I have looked at this just briefly, and the costs could be $12,000.
Okay.
So, you know, $10,000 per connector is helpful.
That's for upgrading.
Yeah,
upgrade. To a level three.
Yeah.
From a two.
No, that would be upgrading to a higher power, faster level two.
Oh.
So level two is also, remember, it's alternating current. Level three is a specialized DC direct current kind of thing. But there are a lot of level twos. Most of them are level twos in our district. And so upgrading them to be higher powered with kilowatts of more like 19, you're going to get out quickly.
Just
I would go there.
Just so I'm clear on that, the $300,000 cost, if you upgrade an existing level two charging station to, is it 300,000 to go to a level three typically?
Yeah, they would have to have a new source of power.
So it's not cheaper if it's already there. I thought you said earlier that.
Yes. Well, if you want to upgrade a level two, it's pretty cheap. But if you want to go from level two to level three, you probably need a new power source. Because you want 400 to 1,000 volts. Yeah. Level two could be 240 volts. That's pretty easy infrastructure. But a level three is going to be 400 to 1,000 volts.
Yeah.
So that's why we're having a higher project limit up to $300,000. So we do want to bring in these DC fast chargers along the highways. So those limits, they focus on two different types. Level two, 10,000 per connector. Level three, big project, $300,000 for the whole project.
You're replacing all the infrastructure, even if it's existing, if you go to level three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was not clear in my head on.
I love all these questions. I get to talk tech with you. Yes, sir.
So I guess my question is about the application process and whether MBARD just waits for entities to apply, or whether MBARD sees the gaps in the network, sees places that need locations or mm-hmm. ideal places for upgrades, and goes out and actively targets potential applicants, et cetera. Because it seems like you've identified places along highways or different communities that could use the upgrade. And so I guess I'm curious about the active kind of outreach for those kinds of.
There's some standard outreach, like constant comment. We're going to do email blasts. There's also a listserv or a mailing list that people can sign up for if they're interested in this. They're going to get emails automatically. But we end up with a lot of word of mouth. And so another way to look at this is, who are the manufacturers of these higher amp units? And those folks are often in sales, and they will help applicants. So we partner with them too. And we're also considering down the road an RFP, particularly for some of these gaps. So yeah, we are thinking along those lines. And if you have any suggestions, we're all ears.
Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, I think get at a little different angle. It's been our policy to actually have people come to us that are ready, shovel ready. We can identify a place along the highway and say it'd be great to have a charging station there. But if there's no electricity to that site, we're looking at least 3 to 10 years to get, in the case of a new substation, it might be upwards of 10 years to get power out there. So we do have the ability to put in some limited solar level two and DC fast charging. That's really expensive. But basically, our approach has been, if you're ready to go, we're ready to fund. Otherwise, we'll strand a lot of our grant monies in the bank, making interest. But we'd like to see it get turned over as quickly as possible.
Anyone else?
No public comments online, nothing received at the office, and no one here in the boardroom.
Thank
Well,
you very
thank you.
much.
Thank you for your
Very
attention.
good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I think you're on, Richard.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So you'll say, I've got happy holidays there. Hope everybody, and Siri put together a really nice little package for you to put on some eat some calories, put on some weight. I'll just go quickly over the last board meeting. This is an update since the last meeting of this body. We had one board meeting, and that was essentially to receive an update on MBARD's air toxics program. You guys saw that. That's required by law, and so that was presented to the board, and they accepted it. Then we also had our AB 2766 grant program. Approved staff recommended projects. So we had a number of projects come to the board for approval, and I think we had about $1.3 million, if I'm not mistaken, that was granted out to various projects by population allocation throughout our three counties. The district business, so just in general, we're really happy to say that we have a new air quality engineer. Her name is Grace Garbatz. Grace started with us on November 3rd. She's got a Bachelor's of Science degree in chemical engineering from UC Santa Barbara, another gaucho, yay for the gauchos out there. And she previously worked as an R&D technician with Santa Cruz Foam, I believe. And she's really amazing, and we're really pleased to have her here. To ensure documents on our website meet accessibility requirements, we've implemented a tool called DocAccess from our website provider. This automatically switches to an accessible view of the document and translates the document into many different languages. A little more efficient than Google. This tool also converts documents in the required accessibility standards, saving our staff time for manually converting them. This is a big problem for agencies right now, ADA compliance, and Seth knows about this. So, there's certain parameters that have to be met for electronic documents and access to websites. So, we're making sure that those needs are and requirements are being met. We issued an authority construct to Verdagy Incorporated for a pilot project. It's a hydrogen-fueled linear generator. And these are, I'm not going to say they're panacea, but they're basically a tube with magnetic coils and essentially a piston. It's fuel agnostic, meaning it can run just about any type of fuel, and the emissions, especially NOx, are super low. So we're probably going to be seeing more and more of these installed because it's a combustion, but very low combustion, very low emissions. And we're really happy to be able to say that we've got one of the first in the state for this pilot project. Odor complaints. It seems like we've become the odor agency. Now, this is not what we do normally, but when anybody smells something, they think that they have to call the district to either report it or to get some sort of enforcement action going on. Well, you can see my long explanation. We basically had 61 odor complaints, which is a huge amount. And this all had to do with an agricultural wastewater pond that's operated by the city of Salinas. And I had farmers calling me saying, am I willing to certify that their crops are not damaged from the odors that were emanating? It was that bad.
Oh.
And so this went on for weeks. And what happened is the pond went septic, meaning like your septic tank, it had no oxygen. And then all the bugs start digesting anaerobically and releasing a lot of the thiols and sulfates. So it smells like rotten eggs. So the only cure for this is to agitate the water and aerate it. So what does that do? That further enhances the liberation of odors. So this thing was just a multi-week process. and a lot of upset people, upset with us, upset with the city of Salinas and, you know, agriculture in general. So we got through it. We ended up citing the city with a notice of violation based on nuisance conditions because it met all of our requirements for that. So that was a pretty big deal. I will say that, you know, it's under control now. And if this is not something new to this agency, we've got a lot of wastewater treatment plants that go septic, as well as other ag type of enterprises that have problems with their settlement ponds. We indicated there, we also found some minor odors from Tanimura and Antles ponds along River Road and Spreckles. But it doesn't stop there, because just this last week, we had numerous complaints regarding odors from Keith A. composting facility at the Marina landfill. And guess what this was? This was caused by about 48 tons of Brussels sprouts that were delivered to the composting facility for composting, and the odors were incredibly extreme. And anybody who's cooked Brussels sprouts or broccoli or cauliflower knows that these, you know, cruciferous vegetables are really smelly when you cook them or let them decompose. And I've got a little explainer there. They've got this compound called glucosinolates, which break down and release volatile sulfur compounds such as hydrogen sulfide. So that was a big thing. So once again, we got sucked into that. We did not do any enforcement, as that we do not have authority to regulate composting activities. That's up to county environmental health. And they weren't really on top of it. And that's all I'll say there. In air monitoring planning, seems like every other day we have another technical systems audit. So Dave and Sean are always walking me through that and working with staff to make sure we're complying with regulation guidance from EPA and CARB. We, as a result, we're usually ahead of the curve, and we welcome any kind of feedback that we get from CARB and EPA. So we are strengthening our program, and I think by and large, our program is very strong. Planning, we've been working with the Department of Toxic Substance Controls on an Army and the Army on a planned 287-acre prescribed burn at former Fort Ord. Now, this was during the government shutdown, everything was off the table, and it didn't look like there was going to be a burn this year. Right now, all bets are off the table, so it could happen. There are pretty much, numerous constraints for this to take place and conditions. So even on a good day, it's hard to get a burnout there. And now we're looking at, you know, trying to get this done by the end of the year. So it could happen, but we have no idea, unless David knows. You've heard anything, Dave?
They're trying to burn.
Yep. I mean, in the past, one of the limiting factors was resources to address any escape fires. So when we have other wildfires throughout the state, they can't burn here, because if it goes wild or gets out of control, there's very limited resources to deploy. That's not the issue right now, but we also have to have really good weather conditions, and we've been seeing with the cold weather recently a lot of inversions. So that's trapping pollutants at a ground level. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we do have the electric vehicle incentive program that's running. This is a little bit old. I think we've got some money remaining in our account for this program, but we've sort of blown through since July about $500,000. So, and as you can see here, Tesla Model Y is the most common vehicle that we've been providing incentives for. Our wood stove changeout program was, which offers incentives to replace non-certified wood stoves, inserts, and fireplaces with cleaner home devices, launched in September. And this is not new this year. We're only opening this disadvantaged communities in low-income areas. In the past, we received money from the state The state zeroed us out this last year, so they were not providing. So we've come up with a couple hundred thousand dollars of our own funds to help pay for this program, and we decided to target low income applicants. And as you can see, 8 applications, probably more by this date, have been received. Outreach, we've been doing a lot of outreach. We did an electric vehicle ride and drive event in October in Watsonville. We had an outreach table to bid fire fair, there is such a thing, at the Henry Cowell Redwoods on October 11th. I attended a press conference in Santa Barbara celebrating the signing of AB 14, the Protecting Blue Skies and Blue Whales program. This is a voluntary program that encourages vessel reduction speeds along the coast of California. It does actually 3 things. Number one, it reduces emissions by reducing the speed of the vessel. Number two, it helps to reduce whale strikes, which is really a good thing to get behind. And then also it lessens the auditory burden or undersea sounds that are creating havoc for a lot of the marine life. So this is actually, it's been in operation for a while now, but finally got codified in the legislature with AB 14. But this voluntary program is more successful than a mandatory program that's on the East Coast. So Santa Barbara, Ventura, and Bay Area helped spearhead this, and we actually got the board involved in helping support this at the legislature, so I'm really happy this is passed. And that was Assemblymember Hart, I believe, from Santa Barbara that sponsored that. We also had our staff annual staff training day on September 30th at Sylmar Meeting Facility. Our keynote speaker was Matt Lakin, who is the former Region 9 Air Director. It was really a great day. The theme was 70s, so folks had fun dressing up and speaking in the parlance of the 1970s. So we had a lot of air quality training and exercises and just, you know, let our hair down. So it was really a great day. And then along those lines, too, we held our annual board retreat, and that was just recently at Hartnell College. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions or suggestions.
Part of our funding for the agency depends on three projects, right? The more emissions a project generates, I assume the answer is more or less yes, but here we have this super clean project which you're projecting a lot fewer emissions from, and I'm wondering how the funding process relates to clean projects.
That's a really great question, and one that we've wrestled with over the years since your time here. We've actually been changing slowly the way we charge for fees, and we're now going to category-based, which is not emissions. To give you an example, when the power plant, this is the gas power plant, back in 1992, which is your time, but well before when I got here, the district actually wrote a rule that held their fees static, even though they reduced NOx emissions by 90%. And the idea was that they were one of the largest sources and that they should pay some of the largest fees. So at that time, they were paying $1.6 million in fees, annual fees to us. Right now, they currently pay around $500,000. And that's because they've significantly reduced their emissions, but we have also had other categories that have come up. So those large sources used to underwrite all the smaller sources. So the balancing act we've been doing over the last decade or so is to charge our larger sources less based on categories. So power plant, wastewater treatment plant, that sort of thing. And then start distributing some of the costs to some of the smaller fee payers. So yeah, we're getting away from that emissions base, because if everybody started emitting zero, we wouldn't have any funding.
Right.
So it is a conundrum. It is one of those Zen things that we've been dealing with. And We think we have an answer for that, and it's been working pretty well thus far. And we do that through our fee regulation, which gets approved every year along with our budget. So we're in really good financial shape. We have enough reserves to probably keep us going for several months. So it's been working pretty well. But yeah, we're really cognizant of that. And that's an issue that's been experienced throughout the country because a lot of air programs are finding a lot of success in reducing emissions and also reducing their revenue. But, you know, the other thing I should just add lastly is that we just don't reduce, you know, the fees and not look at our other programs. When you were here, Janet, I think you were close to 48 or so employees. Right now, we're hovering around 35. So we've also, that's a sign of the times. We're reducing our expenditures as well as our revenues go down. So we're a different agency than we were, and we're constantly reinventing ourselves and looking at different ways to fund programs. And then lastly, I'll just say that on the planning side, we don't get fees, but we have a lot of money coming through, and we're able to get, now, Seth will find this interesting, you know, we get about 15% for overhead and indirect costs, which I've heard some universities collecting over 100%, which is crazy. But so we're held to that amount. But when you have 30 million coming through your you know, accounts, 15% is a lot. And so we're able to staff up and afford our planners and all the good work they do. So two sides of the house, we're fee-based for engineering and compliance mainly. And then for air monitoring, a little bit comes in from that, but primarily grant monies for air monitoring and planning.
Thank you. I have one other question. Do you accept complaints from residential uses?
Yes, we I'm proud to say that we accept any complaint you want to provide us. It can be left on our phone as a message. You can get a hold of an employee, or you can go online and submit one online, and we get back to each individual personally. So, you know, a lot of our return calls are, we don't do that, but thanks for the information. So, but we had a lot of residences calling with the odor complaints and the nuisance rule and state law is written in such a way that essentially, if it's causing an interference of enjoyment of your property, you know, it can be, and there's a sufficient number of people complaining, it can be considered a nuisance.
Thank
Any other questions?
Yeah, I had a quick one. When is the for the prescribed burn order, when is the window expected to close?
Looking at David.
Sorry, when
The window for Fort Ord, when does that close?
the for this year, end of December.
So December, but the real answer is it's open all the time. They try to do one burn a year under optimal conditions. They haven't burned for several years. And that's because, as I previously reported, under the previous Trump administration, all that money that was used for Fort Ord burns went to building the wall on the southern border. And then under the Biden administration, I'm not sure why they couldn't get burning, but it's probably one of our busiest days is talk about phone calls because we get people calling up that are just really upset that Fort Ord's burning. We have allegations of unspent uranium and Agent Orange and, you know, all sorts of claims in a conspiratorial nature that there's untoward things happening. And there was a time where Fort Ord used to pay to relocate some residents in Marina. That does not happen anymore. And instead of being mad at the Department of Toxic Substances Control, the folks are mad at us because that program's not offered. So it is, but we, you know, our phones light up. We usually see spillover in the evenings, and it usually hits Highway 68 when it goes to the smoldering phase. There's not a lot you can do. But we make sure that when they burn, that we get good uplift and that we have good environmental lapse rate so that we're seeing good mixing heights and we don't want to see the plume go out over the populated area.
Richard, do you know
Thank
the
you.
current percentage of Fort Ord that's been cleared so far?
It's exactly 22.978%. No, I have no idea. But here's the thing.
No, I didn't
no,
exact.
No, I'm being facetious for a good reason, because they're actually on the path now that a number of areas that they burned in the past have to be reburned. So it's one of those like Golden Gate Bridges things, you know, as soon as you finish, if they weren't able to extract all the unexploded ordnance in time and the vegetation's grown up over again, they're going to have to reburn. So, but typically I would say it's around 25, David, 25% of that property.
Sounds good.
Yeah. That's how much has been cleared.
Yeah.
Back in the ancient days.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
No hands raised online. No one speaking in the boardroom, and I didn't receive anything.
Okay, well, thank you for your service, and happy holidays to you and your family. We'll move on. Is there any suggestions from the committee on future agenda items? Seeing none. I just have one comment. I want to thank Siri for her wonderful service during the year. Especially, she went above and beyond trying to get quorums for our committee during the last year that normally doesn't have to spend a lot of time on in the past. But thank you very much, and happy holidays to you too. And that's all from me. Any comments from committee members? Okay. I will adjourn. Always like to do that.